Today's DAF is Erchin Kafei. Before we start, I'm just going to review one of the main opinions we saw yesterday that we're going to deal with today, which is we're talking about somebody who sanctifies an ancestral field. So they take that ancestral field, they say, I'm dedicating this to the temple. And then they say, what their job is at that point is to redeem it. They have to pay the value of the field. And when they pay the value of that field, then the land goes back to them. Okay, today we're going to see what if somebody else pays the value of the field instead of them, what happens to the land? What happens to it immediately? And immediately it obviously belongs to whoever paid the land, the value of the land. But what happens to it down the road when the Yovel year comes, the Jubilee year, when the ancestral property is supposed to return to its original owner, what happens to it in that case? We'll get to that later. But then the other thing we learned about is that the Torah gives a particular value, 50 shekel for a particular amount of land. That value is dependent, the value changes every year. If you remember, when you start out in the beginning, it's worth 50, but then every year that gets closer to the next Jubilee year, it goes down by one shekel or one sela, which is the same as a shekel, and a punyon, a little coin, which is 1/48 of a shekel, and it keeps going down, down, down until you get to, if you remember, the 2 years before the Yovel, already it jumps up to 50, and the Mishnah advised, don't do that because you're going to have a huge loss on your land, and you're not going to have a lot of time in which to buy it back. So that's some of the background. We then saw a machloket Rav and Shmuel, who said, what if you sanctify it in the Jubilee year, right? This was all before the Jubilee year leading up, so if you do it in year 49 before the Jubilee year, you have the first year, then you're going to have to pay the full amount, and as it goes down and down and down. But what happens if you sanctify in the Jubilee year? And likewise, we said they had the same machloket. What if you sell it in the Jubilee year? Is the sale valid or not? Can you even do any kind of business with land at that point in time? So Rav says, actually, it works. Kedusha v'noten chamishim. I'm just looking at the sheet at the top. I charted it out. And Shmuel says, einah kedusha kol ikar. Shmuel says, this doesn't work at all. Okay? You basically did nothing. So now we're going to bring a line in our Mishnah that seems to contradict Rav. Tashma. Okay, we're 5 lines from the bottom on Kaf Dalet Amud Bet. V'lo go'alim achar yovel pachot mishana. It says in the Mishnah, you can't redeem it after the Yovel unless a year passes. So Bishlama l'Shmuel, we understand according to Shmuel why lo go'alim achar yovel pachot mishana. What does that mean? It means you can't redeem it in the Yovel year because you can't sanctify it, you can't redeem it. There's no such thing. And you have to wait till the year following the Yovel year. What did Rav say? Rav says you could do it in the Yovel year and you have to pay 50. So it looks like you actually can redeem it in the Yovel year. So what does that line in the Mishnah mean? Logo alim achar yovel pachot mishana. So ela l'rav ma achar yovel shana. So now they say, mi savart achar yovel mamash. Don't understand it the way we meant the year after the Jubilee year, the way the simple reading of the Mishnah is. My achar yovel be'emtza yovel. Now, you might think emtza yovel means the middle of the Jubilee year. No, no, no. The middle of the Jubilee cycle. Meaning, let's say you're in year, Rashi gives, for example, you're 20 years in, or you're 30 years in. So now we have to read the line again. What does it mean? Lo go'alim achar yovel pachot mishana. It means that if you're in the middle of a year again, what happens? Every new year comes and it goes down, right? It goes down by a sel and a punyon. So if you're in year number 30, right? It's going to, right? And then you go down to year number 29, it's going to jump down a sela and a pinyon. But now, what does it mean? Be'emtza yovel? De'kol kama de'lomalia l'shana lo migrale. As long as a full year hasn't elapsed, let's say you're 29 and a half, you're in the middle of the 29 years before, or between 30 and 29, what if you're right in the middle? Does it go down by half a sela and a pinyon? No, it doesn't. Okay? That's what it means. The words, according to Rav, meaning it has nothing to do with the Yovel year. It's talking about Ein Go'alim Achar Yovel Pachot Mishana, meaning each year, it makes sense also, we don't want to reduce the amount the Hekdesh gets. It only goes down when it hits the new year, right? Every time it hits the first of it goes by Tishrei, then we're going to now go down. So now they say, wait a minute. That sounds very nice, except, I don't know if you remember this, but we already learned this. Where did we learn it? in the Mishnah itself. Okay, I'm going to read the whole Mishnah and you'll see. The Mishnah was, it's at the beginning of the parak on yesterday's daf. Eim makdishim lifnei yovel pachot mishtei shanim. Okay, that was, we already explained. Below goalim achar yovel pachot mishana achad. And then it says, eim mechashvim chodeshim lehekdesh, which means it doesn't go by months. We already said that. So now the Gemara says, my kamashna, what are you trying to teach us? Deim mechashvim chodeshim im lehekdesh? Habehedikatani. If you're saying that that line means the same as that line, then the Mishnah makes no sense. You wouldn't have two sentences right next to each other that mean the same thing. So now they say, Habehedikatani, it says it explicitly, eim mechashvim chodeshim im lehekdesh. So now what's the answer? It's a structure, the Mishnah is a structure that's called a ma'tam kamar. It's that one line is coming to explain the previous line. So, ma'tam lo goalim achar yovel pachot mishana, mishum de'em mechashvim chodeshim mehekdesh. The reason why you can't do it any less than a year is because we have this principle that months don't come into the calculation here. Okay, so now what's left to figure out is why don't months come into the calculation? And this is going to be a structure that we're going to see throughout this page, which is we're going to take halachas in the Mishnah, that just kind of say this is the halacha, and as often we see this many times where the Mishnah doesn't explain where they get it from, but there's many braytot out there, which are external sources in the style of generally what we would call a midrash halacha, where they darshan from the psukim how they get to the halacha. So now we're going to have a braita that says, Tanu Rabbanan, minayin she'em mechashvim chodeshim im hekdesh. How do we know that we don't do this? Talmud lamar, b'chishav lo hakohen et hakesef al pi hashanim hanotarot. Right, it says the kohen calculates how much money they owe based on the amount of years that are left. So notice what it says there. Shanim ata mechashev v'yata mechashev chodeshim. It says specifically years, therefore we know it's years and not months. Now it says, now we're going to get to the very last line of the Gemara, of the Mishnah, which is also in this Braita, and then we're going to get to the source for it. Minayin she'im ata rotze lasot chodashim l'shana oseh. But how do you know that there is a particular case when you can calculate months? And if you remember, when did we do that in the Mishnah? We said it's when it benefits the Hekdesh. Now, when does it benefit the Hekdesh? Right, Kol Od, we're continuing along in the Jubilee cycle of all the years. It keeps going down. So obviously, we're not going to count months and let it reduce. But as soon as you get to the 2 years before, what happens? At 2 years before, it goes up to 50. So now, what if you're into the 2 years before, month-wise? So then we're going to let it count because then it benefits the Hekdesh. So now they say, here's a break in the Braita. Hey Chidami, what could be a case where you could do Chodashim Lashana? Kigon de'akdashe b'palge da'arba'im b'timne. For example, if you were sanctified in the middle of the 48th year, which is a year and a half before the end, Talmud lomar, b'chi shav lo akohen mikom akom. Notice it's a little strange. It says in the coin calculates. Why do you need a coin to calculate? All you need is your brain that can calculate. Everyone knows the calculation. You see, now the coin has the rights to calculate it to benefit the Hekdesh. How can you do that? Well, when it gets to within a year and a half before, we can say you don't have to wait till the end of that 2 years before. But as long as you're in the middle of that second year, you can already say it's worth 50 and they have to pay the full value. Okay, new Mishnah. Now we're going to get to really the basics. Hamakdish sadeu b'shata yovel. So now he's makdish his field in the yovel year, or in the yovel cycle. Noten b'zera chomer se'orim 50 shekel kesef. Right? If it's in the beginning of the yovel cycle, he gives 50 shekel for a chomer of se'orim. Okay? I put some amounts here. What's a chomer se'orim? A chomer se'orim is called a core. A core is two litachim. Okay, a letach is half a core. If you see in the middle of the sheet, there's a chart. It's 30 se'ah, okay, which is 60 tirkav, which is 180 kavim. Okay, these are different shirim. Okay, there was a good note in the Koran that said, you know, if you think it's complicated, all these measurements, it's because there's so many different measurements that overlap and that are, there's a lot of different measuring systems. It wasn't like they have one measuring system and they all fell into the same. They're constantly using different measuring names, concept, you know, they measure all over with different measurements, and that's what makes it often complicated to remember all the different measurements that exist. Okay, so basically, the simple is it's 30 se'ah of se'olim. Hayusham nika'im amukim asarat fachim. What if you're measuring property that has these big holes in the ground that are 10 tvachim deep? Or slaim bohim asarat tvachim. Or you have rocks that are 10 tefachim, right? 10 tefachim is hands breadths, 10 hands breadths high. Einam nindadimima. You take that out of the count, of the calculation. Pachot mikam, but if they're less than 10 tefachim deep or tall, then nindadimima, they are counted. Hikdisha shtayim v'shalosh shanim lifnei yovel. If you, as long as you calculate 2 or 3 years before the Yovel, or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7, right, as long as it's not within 2, okay, that's why it says shtayim v'shalosh shanim, notain sela upundyon l'shana. This is the halacha we already discussed, that you give one sela and a pundyon, each year it goes down from the 50 shekel, a sela and a pundyon. V'im amar, hareini notain davar shana b'shana. Let's say you say, I'm going to pay in installments. Okay, I'm going to pay every year. You know, you might say, I'll pay every year, selling a punyon or whatever it is. I'm going to pay in installments. No, you can't do it. Ein shom inlo. We don't allow this. Ela notenet kulo ke'echad. Like I said, when we get to the Gemara, we're going to see the source for all these things. Right now, we're just kind of listing all the halachot, and then the Gemara is going to go into detail about each of these things. Echad ba'alim ve'echad kol adam. Anyone can redeem a field. But ma ben ba'alim l'chol adam? We talked about this yesterday, that if you, what's the difference between you redeeming the field and someone else redeeming the field? That if you redeem the field that you sanctified, you have to add an additional fifth, which we said is a fifth calculated from the whole amount that includes the amount you said and the total, which really means it's a quarter. Okay, it ends up being you add a quarter, 25% over what you had, which then gets you, when you end up with that all together, then it's a fifth of the entire amount. So that's how they always calculate. Chomesh is really a quarter. Tana, or the way we would calculate a quarter. Tana. Now we're going to bring a bunch of brayot that talk about this amount of 30 se'ah of se'orim. What kind of se'orim? Se'orim that are grown or se'orim that are seeds? So now they're going to say, Tana kor zera. There's a brayot that says, we're talking about a kor of zera, of seeds, below kor tfua. All these things make it that what? You're ending up with a much larger area that's worth 50. Because to plant 30 se'ah of seeds is a lot different than 30 se'ah of crop that's growing. Okay, the Gemara actually in different places gives a ratio either 1 to 22 of seed to grain or 1 to 45. So you're talking about a huge difference whether you say it's barley that's grown or barley that's just seeds. Mapolet yad v'lo mapolet shvarim. Now, there's two different ways you can plant. You can plant using oxen, and that's sort of, you know, the way we would say it, using a machine, right? Or you can plant it by hand, manually. Now, if you plant things by hand, they're going to be much more separate than planting them by oxen, because he does it much more automatically, and therefore, again, we're saying it's a much bigger space, because it's the space that it would take to plant 30 core of barley seeds by hand, which is going to be a much, you know, even larger space. Tana Levi, Levi brings a braita that's a little, he's not going so extreme, but he says, lo mu'ubeh v'lo meidak, it's not super dense and not super not dense, ela beinoni, it's in the middle, okay, it's an average. Hayusham nika'im amukim. Now we're going to go back to these nika'im amukim. Now what's strange about nika'im amukim? You have a ditch. Theoretically, you can plant in that, right? In fact, we dig holes in order to plant it. You can plant in that, so why isn't it counted? Now we say, fine, maybe you could say, what's the issue with a ditch that's 10 tefachim? This goes back to Hilchot Shabbat and Rishuyot, and as soon as you have something 10 tefachim deep, it's already considered its own separate entity. So now they're going to say, fine, we understand it's not part of the field because it's got a big ditch in there. But since the big ditch by itself can be planted in, maybe we should sanctify it by itself and say, well, let's, you know, now you have to give the value of the 50 shekel, you know, the proportionally to this amount. Now, the chitim, if you want to say, which means the Gemara is going to bring a suggestion and immediately reject it, kevan de lo havi beit kor lo havakache, it's not actually sanctified because in order for something, okay, we have two options of sanctification. One is, we're going to say it's sanctified and you have to give based on the 50 shekel value and proportional to the amount of land you have. Or if not that, then what do? Based on the actual value of that land itself. So maybe you would say, okay, that since it's not the size of a beit kor, obviously you're not going to have a ditch that's that huge. Since it's not the size of a beit kor, then maybe you don't sanctify it based on this 50. Now, until now, we keep saying that it's proportional. But they're suggesting that maybe the amount the Torah is giving is only if you have minimum of a kor. But if you have less than a kor, then already we just do it based on the actual value of your land and not this set fee of 50 shekel. So if you want to say law of a beit kor, law of a kadshe, that's not true because we have a braita that rejects that option. Vahatanya sadeh. Okay, it's talking about a sadeh in the pasuk. Matamulomar. Why does it say the word sadeh? It seems unnecessary. Lefishenemar zera chomer seorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. You might have thought, since the pasuk tells you you need zera chomer seorim for 50 shekel, ainli ela shikdish kinyan hazeh. Right? Maybe you really need a minimum of a kor in order to, you know, the chomer seorim, in order to have it hikdish in this manner. Again, it'll obviously be hekdesh. It's just a matter of you have two maslulim. One is to be poda at this fixed amount and then proportionally, and one is to be poda for the actual value of that particular piece of land. Minayim l'rabo letech, v'se'ah, v'tirkav, v'chatzi tirkav. How do we know that all these amounts that are purport, you know, that are smaller than a kor, okay, and I already went through what those amounts are. How do we know that you're also chayav, this chamishim shekel, this is set fee, it's just proportional, okay, so let's say a letech would be 25 shkalim, okay, you basically make it proportional. Tamud lamar sadeh mikomakom. Now we get back to that word sadeh comes to include any field. Doesn't matter what size it is, it's just proportional. So now we're back to square one. Why is this hole that's 10 tefachim deep not considered by itself? Say, okay, well, we have this measurement, whatever the measurement of the hole is. Now you have to pay the 50 shekel compared to that measurement, you know, proportional to that measurement. Amar ufar bachama, hacha b'nika'im le'im mayim, delab b'nesriya ninu. It must be that there are ditches that are filled with water that one can't plant in them because they're full of water. And how do they further prove that this must be the case? Daikanami dekatane. Notice from the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said either nika'im amukim or sla'im gvohim. So dumia de sla'im. It must be, if they're comparing these two, putting them next to each other, they must be the same. Now sla'im, if you have a rock sticking out, 10 tefachim high, you obviously can't plant in there. Therefore, the nika'im must be just like sla'im that can't be planted in, and therefore it must be that they're full of water. Shma mina. Then they say, wait a minute. If you're going to say that there are these ditches full of water that can't be planted, so notice what the Mishnah said. If it's less than 10 tefachim, though, then it's considered part of the field and does go into the count. So now the Gemara asks, Ihachi pachot mikeinami. Well, then less than 10 tefachim should also, if you can't plant in them, then why are they considered part of the measurement of the field? Once you're going to say now you can't plant in them, and likewise for these sla'im, these rocks that are less than 10 tefachim tall, you still can't plant that area. Why do we call them? Why are we considering them part of the count? So now the answer, Hanu nigai da'ara mikru or shidre da'ara mikru. These are called cracks in the ground, or the backbone of the ground, right? If you have a stone, a rock sticking up that's less than 10 tefachim tall, they're considered. Now, what's the significance of this? Because their name is called based on the ground. They're considered part of the ground. It's a crack in the ground, or it's a spine of the ground. What does that mean? It means it's still considered part of the karka. So it's what we call in halacha, it's batel la karka. It's basically considered, right, canceled to the ground. It doesn't have significance in and of itself to be considered its own entity. Once it's 10 tefachim, then it's already its own entity, and then we're going to distinguish, well, if it can be planted in, then it's part of, it's a field. If it can't be planted in, then we're not going to count it at all, and, you know, we don't, then it's going to go based on its value, not on this 50 shekel amount. Hikdisha shtayim v'shalosh. Okay, now we go back to the line in the Mishnah. If you did it 2 or 3 years before the Yovel, you give a sela and a punyon. Tanu Rabanan, v'nigra me'erkecha. Okay, now there's one thing we haven't dealt with, okay? This is a very basic question. This is what they're going to deal with in this braita. When do you count the amount that it's worth? Okay, let's say I'm makdish it in year number 30, okay? I say I'm giving this field to the Beit HaMikdash, but it generally happens in this case, you don't necessarily pay up in that year. And you decide to pay in year 29. You're podeid in year 29. So now the value is going to be different based on year number 30 or year number 29. Do you pay the value that it was in year number 30, or do you pay the value in year number 29? Now you might think, because we want to benefit hekdesh, it would be from the time you set it. But in fact, the bright is going to say it's not the case. Because the pasuk says, v'nigra me'erkecha, which is where we learn this halacha, meaning we deduct it from its value, right? Every year it goes down in value. So what did they learn? Af min hekdesh, even if the hekdesh loses out. Every year it goes down in price. Okay? She'im achla hekdesh shana ushtaim. Let's say you were makdish, which means that right now, until I'm poded, it belongs to the Beit HaMikdash. So let's say they ate 2 or 3 years of worth before I redeemed it. Oh, inami, or lo achla ela shaita lefanav, or let's say they didn't plant the field at all. The Beit HaMikdash, they were too busy dealing with other stuff. Someone was makdish this field, they just left it. Nothing grew, okay? Even if nothing grew, notein sela upundyon leshana. Okay? You still give a sel and a pundyon for the year based on the year that you redeem it. In other words, once the hekdesh had it for a few years, we don't count those years because those years belong to the hekdesh. You only pay the value of when you actually redeem it. V'im amar harehu notein. Okay, so again, we have to say harehu notein davar shana b'shana ein shomin lo ela notein et kulo ke'achad. You can't pay in tashlumin, installments. You have to pay it all at once. Tanu Rabbanan. So again, we're going to bring a bride to find the source for this. How do we know? Talmud Lamar. B'chishav lo akohen et hakesef. What do we learn from that? Et hakesef. What does it say? The money. From there they learn. Ad shehe kesef kulo ke'echad. Has to be the money is all at once. Now this is a strange thing because what we're going to have here is an exact quote from the Mishnah. And instead of going in depth, it's just going to quote the line. Echad ba'alim ve'echad kol adam. Ma bein ba'alim v'chol adam, she'ba'alim nonim chomesh v'chol adam ein nonim chomesh. Right, that's just a quote for the last line of the Mishnah, which tells you that there's no difference between if someone else redeems it or the person himself redeems it. The main difference is that I'm just kind of translating the words ein, right? There is a difference specifically in the fact that the ba'alim have to give a chomesh. Now, you might say, why would the Gemara just quote the last line of the Mishnah? It doesn't make any sense. So some people explain it's because it's a lead-in to the next line of the Mishnah, so they kind of want to get you into the mode of where we're going. But I think a better answer is it was probably the end of the previous Braita that they quoted. Often when they quote a Braita, they quote the Braita in its entirety, and often we see Braita that have the exact same wording as the Mishnah, and it's very likely it was just part of that Braita, and that's why they quoted it. Okay, so now that leads us anyway into the next Mishnah, whether it was intentional or not. What was the Mishnah just talking about? The difference between if you redeem it yourself or someone else redeems it. Now we're going to see other differences. Hikdisha v'ge'ala. Let's say you sanctify it, then you redeem it. Ena yotzami adobi yovel. So when the yovel year comes, it's yours forever, okay? Ge'ala b'no. Remember, we're talking about, I just want to clarify, we're talking about ancestral fields. That in a normal scenario, if you would sell it, forget about sanctifying it, if you would sell it, it would go back to you in the Yovel year. Okay, you would get your land back, which again, always seems like a strange thing, not so fair to the person who bought it, but you have to remember, the person who bought it knew the halacha, and the sale in the shuk was, it was more like renting it. We have properties like this nowadays also, where there's lands in Israel that go back. What?
Minhal land.
There's Minhal land that basically is rented for 48 years or 96 years. There's or something 50 years or 100 years or there's all types of land in Israel that works like that. And it's similar. That it's that kind of land, so you know that it won't be yours forever. So the price is according to that somewhat anyway. So if hikdisha, so now you sanctify it and you redeem it. So of course it's yours. Ge'ala b'no, let's say your son redeems it. So now the field belongs to your son. What happens when the Yovel year comes? Yotza l'aviv b'yovel. It goes back to his father in the Yovel year. Ge'ala acher, if someone else redeemed it, we're going to have four possibilities, okay? The person himself, the son, someone else, or a kohen. So, ge'ala acher. Now, what did we learn already? That if you don't redeem it at all, what happens? It becomes the property of the kohanim in the Yovel year, okay? If you don't redeem it. So now they say, ge'ala acher, o echad me'akrovim, if either some stranger does it, redeems it, or one of your relatives, that's not your son, and uge'ala mi'ado, and even if the original owner buys it back from that person, yotza l'kohanim b'yovel. Basically, if the owner or his son doesn't redeem it, and someone else redeems it, even if they bought it back, it goes back in the Yovel to the Kohanim. Basically, the Kohanim get rights to it if the owner himself or his son, who's considered an extension of himself, doesn't buy it. Ge'alacha min ha'Kohanim. Let's say a Kohen redeems it. Bahrei tachat yado. Now, we talked yesterday about the Kohanim fighting over it. Here you're going to see that actually it wasn't a fight who gets to get it. We'll see how it worked. So, assuming that Kohen bought it, and now comes the Yovel year, and it's tachat yado. It's in his property. So you'd think, what? He has more rights to it than any other Kohen. Because in general, in halacha, we say, amotzim echaber olav haraya, you know, whoever's holding it, the status quo. Lo yomar, you can't say, ho'il b'hi yotzal l'kohanim b'yovel, v'harehi tachat yadi, harehi shali. You can't say, look, since it goes to the Kohanim, it reverts back to the Kohanim b'yovel, and hey, I'm a Kohen, and hey, I own it right now. It's going to be mine. No, that doesn't work. Ela yotzal mitachat yado, u'mitchaleket l'chol echav ha'kohanim. It gets divided up among all the Kohanim. Even though it says it gets divided among all the Kohanim, there's many who explain that, and actually I don't 100% understand it because there's a little of an issue for me. I'll explain to you why. They say that the Kohanim that were on the Mishmar of that week, like when it's there, I remember the Kohanim were split up into Mishmarot, 24 Mishmarot, they each worked twice a year plus the Chagim. They worked during the week, so it would be split up by the people who were on the Mishmar of that week. Now it doesn't make so much sense to say that because if you say that, well then, the Yovel year kicks in. Whoever's got the first Mishmar of the Yovel year gets all the property. So it's hard to understand how that works exactly. But I did see that people said that that's how it works. But there must be some other way to divide it more evenly between the Kohanim, especially because you see here that even someone who purchased it doesn't get rights to it, even though he's a Kohen. Tanu Rabbanan. So now we're going to have a braita again to find the sources of these halachas. So now it says, Im lo yig ala tasadeh. Okay, so here's the pasuk. I'll read it from Vayikra Kaf Zayin Kaf. Im lo yig ala tasadeh, ve'im machar tasadeh, li'ish acher, lo yig el od. Right, so if you don't redeem the field, and if you sold the field to somebody else, it can never be redeemed. That means it doesn't go back to its original owner. So that's how we get the halacha. So im lo yig ala tasadeh, who is that referring to? The Baalim. Obviously, it's not referring to anybody because, right, it's referring to the Baalim. If he doesn't redeem it, Ve'im machar tasadeh, who's the one who can sell the field? The gizbar, the treasurer of the Beit HaMikdash. Li'ish acher, now what are they darshan from the words li'ish acher, and we'll see in a minute how they darshan it. La'acher velo leben, it comes to exclude the son. If the son were to buy it, then this wouldn't be true, that it would never go back to him. It would actually go back to him. Right, acher implies somewhat of a stranger, right? Somebody else, someone different.
I'm just confused about something.
Yeah.
This means that there was a Yovel year, and the owner didn't come to redeem it. So this means this is happening afterwards. In other words, for the next Yovel year.
No, it means, what do you mean? It means you're standing in year number 30 before the Yovel, you're machdish the field, and then you never redeem it. Or someone redeems it before the Yovel year. What happens to that field in Shnat Yovel? So if you redeemed it yourself,
then you pay the value of it.
If you pay the value, then the field becomes yours and it's yours forever. If your son paid the value, then your son owns the field from the year he redeemed it until the Jubilee year. When the Jubilee year comes, it goes back to the father. If some stranger redeems it, it's his until the Jubilee year. Jubilee year comes and it goes to the Kohanim. A Kohen redeems it also. It goes to all the Kohanim or somehow divided up by Kohanim in the Yovel year. It's his until then, okay? So now they want to say, how do we get the son from here? Ata omer la'acher v'lo la'ben. O enu ela la'acher v'lo la'ach. Theoretically, it's as though it's a question, who's more karov, the son or a brother? So how do you know it's the son and it doesn't come to say the brother? If the brother brought it back, it would go back to his brother, the original owner, on the Yovel year. So, kishu omer ish harei achamor. They say ish already. Ish would imply, if the pasuk just said ish, right? Then it would include even his brother, or his brother is a regular ish. Ha, ma'ani makayim acher. So what does the word acher come to say is excluded from this? Velo leben, right? But a ben would be excluded from this halacha that it never goes back to the father, because a ben it would go back. So now, this wasn't exactly, you might say, okay, well, who's to say ish includes ach, and acher excludes ben? Maybe it would be the reverse. Umara ita, l'rabot et ha-ben v'lo tzi et ha-ach, right? It sounds a little arbitrary. So now, why did you pick to say the ben is closer to the father than the brother, basically? Why is that? Marbani et haben sheken kam tachat aviv liyidah ule'eved ivri. We see two cases where a son can function in place of the father. What are those two cases? One is yi'ud. They both have to do with eved, an eved ivri or ama ivriya. When you buy an ama ivriya, a man buys an Amai Vriya. The idea is she's supposed to work in his house. She's usually very young. And when she comes of age, either he's supposed to marry her or the son's supposed to marry her. And if not, then she goes free. What?
No.
Right, and she goes free. So now, what does it mean? So now, it's the son. It's either the father or the son. The son can function just like the father in this case. Likewise with Eved Ivri. What does that have to do with Eved Ivri? If you're an Eved Ivri, when do you go free? After 7 years. But you also go free if your master dies, unless he has a son. If he has a son, then you go straight to the son, and you belong to the son. But if he has a brother, let's say he has no sons and only a brother, you don't go to the brother, you go free. So here you see, a son comes in place of the father. So now the Braita continues and says, Adrabba, I could say the reverse. Marbani ta'ach sheken kam tachad aviv. When does the brother come in place of his brother? Li yibum, when it comes to yibum, right? Lever at marriage. When you end up with a person has no children, so the brother has to marry the wife in order to be mekim shemamed. If not, they do chalitza. So there you see, a brother can come in place of his own brother also. So why did you choose Ben and not brother? So what did they answer? Klum yesh yibum, ela b'makom she'em ben. Hayesh ben, en yibum. Yibum is only when there isn't a son. What does that show? It's so is the son, it's closer to the father. Yibum will only be when there's no son. But that shows the son is really first and the brother second. So now that's the end of the Braita. Now the Gemara questions that Braita and says you had a better answer. What was your easier answer to say instead of saying that? You can use the numbers game, it's quantity. There are two similarities. A brother is similar. I'm sorry, the son is similar in two ways, Yud and Eved Ivri. And the brother is only similar in Yibum. So what do they answer? Mishum de Eved Ivri mehar perchanami hu denafkale. Where did we learn this halacha? Okay, I don't know if you knew this halacha about an Eved Ivri, because it doesn't say it in the Torah, that it goes to the son. Where did they learn it from? They learn it from Yibum. Okay, they say, they learn it from the same place as they learn the other. They say, why? The question is again, the question is asked by Eved Ivri, why wouldn't it go? Okay, I'll tell you the background. It says, Shesh Shanim Ya'avod, and it says also, Va'avadcha Shesh Shanim. Now, what's the difference there? Ya'avod means he works in general. Avadcha means he works for you. So, how do they reconcile? He works for you, but also he works in general, that there must be someone that he'll also work for besides you. And then they say, well, who would that be? Would it be the son or the brother? And what do they say? Oh, well, it must be the son because the son is closer than the brother because Yibum will only take place when there's no son. So since they use that same logic, basically by saying Eved Ivri, you would have to say because of that reason. Because really Eved Ivri isn't like two, it would end up not being a good numbers game because that's basically got the same logic as the other. So that's why they bring that answer because that answer is really the answer for Eved Ivri also. Okay, and that's why they say that answer and not one versus two. Bye, Rabbah. Now we're going to have a slew of questions. Okay? Bye. I'll look on my sheet. We have a question. Right, three questions. Okay? Rabbah Rabu is going to ask, Rabbi Zeira is going to ask, and Rabbi Barham is going to ask Rabbi Chista. Okay? Two are going to have an answer, and one is going to be left with a teku. And two are going to relate to women. Okay? Bye, Rabbah Bar Avua. Bat Maushe Tamid Sadeh Lavia. What did we say? A son is not an acher compared to the father. So if the son redeems the field, then what happens? It goes to the father in the yovel year. What if the daughter bought the field? Okay, here you see, by the way, a daughter, right, in general, women didn't have property and possessions to buy, but sometimes they did. Sometimes they got inheritance that went straight to them. Let's say she had money from someplace, and she had money, and she buys the field back. So just go back to her father in the yovel year. Do we say, Kevan de l'inyan yibum, we're back to yibum now, Ben ubat kiadade patre. Since when it comes to Yibum, now, it's only a man who has no children. It's not a man who has no sons. It's a man who has no sons or daughters. Daughters and sons are equal when it comes to Yibum in terms of the wife not having to do Yibum with the brother not having to do Yibum if there's a daughter. So since that would be the case, Mukma, would we say she be just like the son in this area and the Sadeh would go back to the father? O Dilma, kevan de l'inyan nachala. Bat bimkom ben ki acher da damya lo mukma. Or do we say that when it comes to inheritance, what does it mean, bat bimkom ben? Yes, a daughter can inherit, but only when there's no son. But when there is a son, The bat is like a stranger, basically. She's got no rights to the nachala at all. Therefore, would we say that she's like an acher and lo mukma, and her buying the land would not be as if the father bought the land. So they're going to bring a source. What do they say? Tashma, detana debe Rabbi Ishmael, kol shehu acher b'mkom ben. Says anyone who's an acher when there's a son. So what do you see here? Hanami b'mkom ben acher damya. Since the girl is like an acher when the son is around, she's considered an acher and she's actually not part of things here. Okay? So we just, girls are not included. They're not considered like a son. By Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera asks now, Isha mi ma'amid la sadeh. Who buys back a field for the woman? Okay, let's say she sanctifies a field. Now, when it comes to her sanctifying a field, what if her husband, okay, so now there's two people who are considered connected to the woman when it comes to her property. What is it? Who is it? It's a son who could inherit the mother if the father's not alive anymore, or the husband who inherits the wife when she dies. So, Isha mima mid la sadeh. Do we say, Baal mokim la? He's the one who could buy it back and it will go back to her because Yorsha, because he inherits her. O dilma ben mokim la? Or do we say the son is more close to her? Why? It's true they both inherit, so theoretically they both be equal, but a son actually inherits her more than the husband would. In what case? Shekein notel b'ra'oi kivimuchzak. What does that mean? We've seen this a few times already. That means if a woman, after she dies, some inheritance, like there's property that goes to her that wasn't in her possession when she was alive, but when she dies, it should go to her. The sons get to inherit that, but not the husband. Okay, it doesn't go to the husband, that stuff. He only gets what was in her possession at the time of death. He doesn't get things that were going to be coming to her at some future time. So maybe the son is closer than the father. Interestingly, they don't give two options. It would be both, right? Teku. So this ends in teku. They don't have an answer. What's interesting about this, okay, I thought to go into this because it's about women and their connection. So anyway, the Rambam says, you're left with the teku, so what do we do? Okay, so the Rambam says, Haisha, okay, we're in Erechin, Perek Dalet, Halacha Kaf Ben. Haisha sheigdisha steh chuza, uge'ala ba'ala miyad ha'hekdesh, if he redeems it, v'yigia ha'yovel, right, so now that's our case, right, the yovel comes, v'yitachat yad ha'bal, harei ha'davar safek, im tachzor la'isha u'tetzeh l'kohanim, it's a safek, what to do with it. Therefore, so what do you do? L'fichach, im kidma ha'isha b'echzika ba'achar ha'yovel, if she goes down there what do we do with safek? We say, whoever's got rights to it. So if she goes and takes it herself without anyone telling her, the Kohanim, since they can't prove that it's theirs, they can't take it away from her. So it's one of those safek cases, kind of like whoever grabs it first, right, it'll be in their possession. But the Ravid disagrees and says, Mistabra shaisha yoter muhzeket. Okay, he says, no, it seems like really the woman should get it. Sheya ba'ala ki yada isha b'kol nechaseh. Since her and her husband, right, her husband basically has all rights to her nechaseh, so it should seem like it's the same. V'kevin shasadeh tachat yada ba'al, harei zocha latzmo ba b'shvil perotav. Okay, basically he says the wife should get it. Okay, now, it's interesting, the Rambam seems to have had a different girsa in the Gemara because he doesn't talk about a son. Okay, the safek is about the husband. And it seems like his girsa wasn't husband or son, it was husband. Does husband get it or does husband not get it? Okay, and that's left the safek. And it's interesting that he didn't have a son in the girsa, and that also affects how he reads this. It's just a safek about the father, about the husband. Okay, moving on. Next question. Ba'amine Rami Bar Chama Mirav Chista. Hikdisha pachot mishtei shanim lefnei ha'yovel, ma'u sheteitzei lakoanim. If you sanctify something 2 years before the Yovel, within 2 years, does it go to the Kohanim? So now he says to him, "My da'atech, what's your question at all?" Vini, right? This is like a bad question you asked. It's pretty obvious. Vini grame erkecha, it says, "Vayat sadeh b'tzei tobit Yovel, dibat gera on in, dilab bat gera on lo." And that's, why are you asking this question? Are you trying to say, in other words, the question is, right, you sanctify it within 2 years, and then you don't redeem it. Does it go to the Kohanim? Why wouldn't it go to the Kohanim? Are you trying to say, because it says, vinigrame erkecha, So only when it goes down every year does this law apply. And in this case, you're no longer in the place where it's being deducted every year because it already went back up to the full value. So are you saying, that's what the pasuk says, that would only apply if it's still going down in value, and therefore that whole thing doesn't apply. If it's within 2 years, you could see, by the way, why you would say maybe it wouldn't go to the Kohanim within 2 years. Because maybe in that case, we give you a special dispensation and we give you a little extra time to buy it back. That could maybe be his logic. But, of course, he's going to reject this. It says, Im lo yiga'el hasadeh, v'ayat sadeh, v'tzei tobi yovel, v'haynami bat geulahi. Theoretically, you could redeem it. And since it says, if you don't redeem it, then it goes to the Kohanim, since you potentially could have redeemed it, it's true you had to pay a lot of money, but potentially you could have redeemed it, therefore it goes to the Kohanim. Ge'ala echat min ha-Kohanim. Okay, now we have this case where the Kohen redeems it and he wants to keep it for himself, but he can't. So again, we're going to see the source for this. Tanu Rabbanan, la Kohen tiye achuzato. Okay, the achuzah goes to the Kohen. Now this is a strange thing. Achuzato, it should be la Kohen tiye achuzah. It's not his ancestral property. So what do they say? Matamud lomar, why is it achuzato? It's to teach you, minayin l'sadeh sheyotzei l'kohanim biyovel, v'gala cha min ha-kohanim, minayin shelo yomar, ho'il biyotza l'kohanim, harei utacha yadi v'teshali. How do you know that you can't say, it's mine because I already bought it? Vidinu, logically, you could say this argument. Why? What would you say? B'shel achirim ani zocheh, b'shel atzmi lo kol shekeh. If I could get someone else's land, of course, if I already bought this land and it's mine, all the more so I should have rights to it, right? Therefore, lo kol shekein, shouldn't it be obvious? Tamud lamar achuzato. What does it say? He only gets achuza shelo. If it was an ancestral property of his own, ve'ein zo shelo, and this is not his, so therefore he doesn't get it because it's not his. That's how they understand the achuzato. So again, haketzad, so what happens then? Yotzei mitachat yado, mitchaleket lachiv ha-kohanim. Right, we take it away from him and then we divide it up among the kohanim. Okay, we'll stop here for today. We'll pick up from the Mishnah tomorrow.